What's up, guys? This is Jacques. Welcome back to Unpopular. We're going to get right into things today. Just firstly, I want to really quickly thank everyone who went and left me a review after I had a whinge last week, because a bunch of you actually listened and went and did it. I was shocked. A lot of you went and left me reviews, including a lot of my Aussie listeners, which I specifically requested. So shout out to all of you. And someone even dropped me a review over on Podchaser, which I think they had to like make an account and everything to go and do that. So I love you for that. Someone said my intro music was terrible, though. I thought my music was cool. But to be honest, I actually have been thinking of changing it for a while. I just didn't want to change it too soon because obviously I changed the name of the podcast about a month ago, and I'm like, oh, if I change like too much stuff all at once, I don't know, maybe it'll confuse people. Someone might turn it on and be like, what is this show? So I don't know, but I appreciate the feedback. We love constructive criticism. I'm also going to attempt to make my episodes shorter and to drop 2 episodes a week when I can. I definitely never intended my episodes to be as long as they have been. Like, it just happens naturally. So whenever I do find myself going on for like an 80-minute episode or something, like last week's episode was 80-something minutes and I actually cut out a whole segment. So when that happens, I'm going to try and like split them into 2 episodes because I think that's easier. So I'll see how that goes, and yeah, we'll just wait and see. It'll depend on my schedule sometimes, but you will definitely get the regular scheduled episode at the start of the week, but you just might get another like bonus one later in the week. And I cannot wait until I'm in a position where I can actually like officially be giving like 2 episodes a week without fail, and then maybe even extra content, because I have so many topics that I want to cover and so many things that I want to talk about, and I just can't get to them all. So yeah, we'll just see how it goes. Anyway, let's just get into the show. So you know that I've been following this Chris Harrison Bachelor racism controversy that never seems to end. I've been following it more closely for the last few weeks than I have the actual season of The Bachelor, because it's been a lot more interesting. I thought that this was over and done with now. He had his official apology to Michael Strahan on Good Morning America. It was a pretty bad apology, but it looked like it was like the first stop of a apology tour. I know that Rachel Lindsay, after she got in trouble on Instagram for her own kind of hypocrisy, she came out and officially forgave Chris and said it's time to move on. You know, he's had huge backlash. They pulled him from the After the Final Rose special. I felt like he was sufficiently punished for talking over somebody in an interview, but apparently not, because he has now been axed from the next season of The Bachelorette. So in an official statement, the production company said, "We support Chris in the work that he is committed to doing." What is his work with the race educator? What did he have, a racial strategist or something? So I guess he's still doing his racial strategy lessons. Anyway, let me get back to this statement. We support Chris in the work that he is committed to doing. In his absence, former Bachelorettes Tasia Adams and Caitlin Bristow will support the new Bachelorettes through next season, as we continue the dialogue around achieving greater equity and inclusion within the Bachelor franchise. We are dedicated to improving the BIPOC representation of our crew, including among the executive producer ranks. These are important steps in effecting fundamental change so that our franchise is a celebration of love that is reflective of our world. Okay, so I don't even really understand what they're doing. If they fire Chris Harrison, that's just like beyond, like that's fucking ridiculous if they end up firing him for that one interview of talking over Rachel Lindsay, which has been dealt with. He's been punished. Rachel's moved on. We've all fucking moved on. So if they fire him, it's a fucking joke. But then if they bring him back, it's also so stupid, because it's like, I mean, they should bring him back now, but I mean, taking him off, what, the next season of The Bachelorette and then bringing him back, it's just such a lame, like, little token. Like, why even bother? Like, if you're going to bring him back, just bring him back now. It's just kind of like a symbolic display to be like, okay, Chris, we're just going to have you lay low for a little while, just so everyone gets over this. Let's just do a season of The Bachelorette without you, and then we'll bring you back later. So if they're going to bring him back later anyway, just fucking bring him back now. Do I think Tasia and Caitlin Bristow will do a good job hosting The Bachelorette? I mean, sure, Tasia has all the makings of a TV host. She looks like the perfect extra TV correspondent, and Caitlin Bristow is all about the media. She went into The Bachelorette. I think she's admitted it openly herself that she went in wanting a media profile, and she's got it. She's got a hit podcast. She won Dancing with the Stars. I'm sure she does plenty of other stuff, so I'm sure they'll be fine, but Chris Harrison is part of the DNA of The Bachelor in the same way that Jeff Probst is for Survivor. These hosts are, I wouldn't say that they're like essential to the show, but they're certainly an important part of it. And I want Chris back. I know a lot of people do. I think that the network is going to have a lot of trouble on their hands if they actually dump Chris Harrison for good. I mean, I think people are going to be pissed off even just that they're not having him on The Bachelorette, but I think a lot of people are not going to be cool with this, because you either have people that, I mean, look, you do have those people that are on more of the conservative side that just, they don't think that anything's problematic at all. Like, you could put the worst behavior in front of them and they'd make an excuse for it. But then you also have, I think, people just in the middle that are like, this is ridiculous. Like, it's so overblown, this whole thing. So I think if they got rid of Chris Harrison, I think a lot of people will view it as cancel culture. I would, if they fired him officially. I think a lot of people would. I think a lot of people would stop watching. Like, I don't think it would destroy the show, but you don't want to lose viewers. I mean, these shows already just manage to lose viewers each year anyway, as like TV audiences get more fragmented with streaming and stuff. So they certainly don't want to take a hit on the ratings there. So, I mean, they really need to keep Chris Harrison on this show, because I think there's going to be a lot of backlash if they get rid of him. And I think that Chris Harrison will speak up a bit more if he felt like he lost his job, because, you know, we all know that he's not a fan of the woke police. He's pretending now that he's all, you know, that he's learned his lesson, that he's never going to use the term woke police. But that's only because he still thinks he has his ABC contract. I think if they fired him, I think Chris Harrison would get out there and would be speaking a lot more freely, and I just don't think it would be a good look. Now, as for The Bachelorette casting, here's a spoiler alert, so if you don't want to hear this, just skip forward 2 minutes. Reality Steve said that the two Bachelorettes confirmed are Vibrator Katie. Of course, she's the one that came in with the vibrator at night one. She was good on the show. And Michelle, who is the, she's the teacher, she's black. So they have a bit of diversity. Then they've also got the more kind of like wild character in Katie. It's not two Bachelorettes with one season like they did with Claire and Tasia. They're actually shooting 2 seasons of The Bachelorette, which is strange. I don't get how they're doing it. I think they're shooting Katie's first and then they're going to shoot Michelle's, but I don't know if it's like, are they going to air 2 seasons of The Bachelorette in 1 year, or are they just like planning this in advance? I guess they're going to air them in the same year, because if they waited that long, like, Michelle could then like snap up a man anyway, so she wouldn't be able to be The Bachelorette. So I guess maybe they're going to air 2 seasons of the show. Yeah, it's fine. I don't really like how they're doing things differently in The Bachelor universe. Like, I didn't like that Matt James had never been on The Bachelor before. Matt James had never been on The Bachelorette before, and that's usually how you get to become The Bachelor. So I didn't like that, and I was right about it, because he was pretty awkward and boring on camera. Claire and Tasia's season, look, I can't hold that against them, because they did the best they could during the pandemic, but I just want Bachelor in Paradise back on. I want the usual formula of the shows, of the timeline, of the way that they cast it. Of course, I'm happy for the more diversity, so I'm not referring to that when I say I want things back how they are. I'm not like, take it back to an all-white cast. Of course, I'm not saying that, but I just want things to flow as they did. I don't know about this whole, we're announcing 2 Bachelorettes. I don't know if they're doing this because, again, this is from Reality Steve, so maybe it's not even official, but he's usually pretty right when it comes to this stuff. Maybe they're doing this because they really wanted Katie, because they felt like she would be a really good Bachelorette, which she will be. She's like, she caused a lot of trouble on the show. She's outspoken. She's sex positive. She'll be a great lead on the show. But they might not have wanted, with the sort of racial sensitivities and tensions right now, they don't want to just like come and announce a white Bachelorette, because then all the people on the Reddit are gonna, you know, get upset and I don't know, tweet angrily about it. So this is their way of covering their own ass of being like, we're giving you the nice Michelle, the woman of color. We're going to have another black lead. She's a teacher. She's amazing, which she is great. Like, she'll be good too. She'll be a good lead on the show in a different way because she's not as wild as Katie. Like, Katie will probably give us more of a Hannah Brown type season where it's just like a little messy and stuff. And then I think that Michelle will be kind of more like wholesome and aspirational. And yeah, I think it'll be good. And I think that they've announced them both because it's sort of like their way of not getting backlash for having Katie as the lead. So yeah, look, it is what it is. They better not fucking fire Chris Harrison. That's all I'm saying, because this is so fucking stupid. I can't believe this is still going on. My God, over that one interview. I'm pretty sure that I vowed last episode never to talk about Meghan Markle again. Well, I'm going back on it because I want to touch on some of the aftermath of the Oprah interview, and then I want to get into this whole Piers Morgan thing that's going on, okay? So a lot of you sent me messages after my last episode aired with receipts about Meghan lying in the Oprah interview, and I've seen all the headlines refuting what she said, and honestly, I don't care. I'm sure she did lie about certain things, I'm sure she told the truth about other stuff, I mean, it's a mixed bag, whatever. What I have noticed is that with Meghan, she's been so politicized now in the same way that coronavirus and wearing a mask was. It's kind of like something that shouldn't be politicized now has been. It's like if you're conservative, the default position is that you have to hate Meghan Markle. And if you're more like liberal, you have to worship her. Like, does every single thing in this world need to be turned into a left versus right issue? And honestly, a lot of the backlash against Meghan that I've seen is so vitriolic and toxic. Like, it's way too far. Like, I get that if you think she's this, like, calculating social climber, I mean, I kind of agree with you, but, like, she's no fawn in the woods, that's for sure. But, you know, it's not the end of the world. Like, it doesn't require this much, you know, animosity towards her. It's just so overboard. And can people please stop feeling sorry for her? I cannot handle this Meghan Markle pity party all the time. She just bought a fucking $14 million mansion in Montecito last year. Like, she's fine. She literally has every single thing she has ever wanted in her life. Like, I don't think you could find a more fortunate and privileged person on the planet than Meghan Markle, okay? So let's get to Piers Morgan. Piers has been carrying on like a fucking turkey all week about Meghan Markle. It's just so fucking over the top. It's like he has Meghan Markle derangement syndrome, and it peaked when he stormed off the set of Good Morning Britain live on air after fighting with the weatherman about Meghan, and now he's quit the show. Everyone is talking about this, like from social media to the entertainment media to the news media. It's pretty much been the biggest story in the media, aside from Meghan's actual Oprah interview, but like Piers Morgan's reaction and fallout is everywhere. And I've seen a lot of smug people on Twitter dunking on Piers, like, who's the snowflake now? Well, you've all been played because this is just a huge publicity stunt, and every single person that's reacting strongly to Piers is playing right into his hands. This includes Meghan Markle herself, by the way, who apparently filed a complaint against Piers, which I'm sure he just loves that, and he's probably going to use that to paint her as a snowflake. It's just more ammo for him. Piers technically quit Good Morning Britain, but he did it in a way where he was able to make it look like he was run off the show by a bunch of woke lefties who couldn't handle his opinion and his free speech. He's used it to drum up publicity and to position himself as kind of like this, like a bastion of free speech and a victim of cancel culture. You know, I saw that Ben Shapiro did a video on it called Woke Insanity that had over 1 million views when I checked the other day. And then the video of Piers actually storming off of Good Morning Britain had almost 9 million as of yesterday. Like Megyn Kelly, Sharon Osbourne, other celebrities have come out to defend him. Like, you cannot buy this level of publicity. It's kind of amazing. And there's so much buzz around him now that he's just going to use all of this press to make his next venture extremely lucrative. I thought initially that he was going to go work for himself and maybe launch a podcast and do his own brand, but I was doing some Googling and now I kind of have a different prediction. So Rupert Murdoch, obviously he is the mogul that runs News Corp and Fox News. He is launching a new conservative news network in Britain called GB News. I think it's going to be like a British Fox News. here's a quote about the network that I got from The Sun, okay? It says, they segment the day into individual programs, news-based programs built around very strong presenters or anchors, as they call them in the United States, and that is what we will do. It will have anchors with a bit of edge, a bit of attitude, a bit of personality, and people will make an appointment to view them. That's the plan. I mean, does that not sound like a job perfect for Piers Morgan? That's just literally American cable news, and they're bringing over the model to Britain. The only way that I see him not signing on to GB News is if they don't offer him enough airtime or enough money. I mean, he has a big ego. And to be fair, he is a huge star in the news media space. So his contract would be worth a lot. And if he doesn't do GB News, then he'll totally do like his own podcast and he'll probably just work as a paid contributor for cable news. But I think that he's going over to GB News, and this is a really bad sign for journalism, by the way. We need less cable news, not more of it. It's like toxic brain rot, especially American cable news. So it's a bit scary that Britain is going to emulate it now, but it is very entertaining for sure. Like, I do love a good cable news smackdown, but all these shows like Fox News and MSNBC and Good Morning Britain, they're basically just Jerry Springer with some politics thrown in. That's what The View is. The View is just Real Housewives with a political topic to argue about instead of, did you sleep with Brandy Glanville? It's all just fucking trash, but whatever. Piers is very good at his job and he knows how to stir up some controversy. Like, right now, I just feel like so many people have fallen into his trap. He's probably sitting at home scrolling through, like, the tweets of people complaining about him and just rubbing his hands together in glee and seeing dollar signs in his eyes. There's just all these people on Twitter celebrating like they finally got rid of Piers Morgan when in reality, he's probably about to be, like, bigger and more relevant than he's ever been before. And by the way, do you guys know the origin of his hatred for Megan? It's pretty funny. He's told this story many times and some videos have been going viral on Twitter now. He basically slid into her DMs on Twitter a few years ago because he was a fan of Suits. That's the drama that the legal drama that she did before she met Harry. He loved that show. He slid in her DMs. They met up for a drink at a pub. And then right after that, she met Harry and she ghosted Piers. Piers actually tells this story himself, which I can't believe because he's married. And when he met Megan, like, it was clearly more than just a friendly catch up. Like, if you message an attractive actress, like, you're a powerful man that works in the industry, the media industry, right? You're a TV personality, as Piers is. You see an attractive, glamorous woman like Meghan Markle on a TV show you like, you slide into her DMs and you go, oh, let's meet for a drink at the pub. Like, that's not just a business arrangement. That's like, oh, I hope I get lucky. And this whole thing just proves that, like, Piers got his ego bruised by Megan blowing him off, which is fucking hilarious. But it does also paint a bit of a picture of what Megan was like pre-royalty. I'm sure that she met up with a lot of important and influential people for drinks to see who could help take her to the next level that she was trying to get on. And then, hey, who bigger than a royal? Who bigger than Prince Harry? So good for you, Megan. The hustle paid off. Megan is a 100 millionaire in Hollywood. Again, please don't feel sorry for her. Everyone's getting what they want. She's living large. Piers is about to sign some super lucrative media deal somewhere, whether it's a podcast network or GB News. And look, the rest of us are just stuck arguing about it on Twitter like losers. That's how it goes, isn't it? All right, guys, I finally watched the Woody Allen documentary. I loved it. It was very compelling. It was also extremely biased. Like, it does not even pretend to be objective in the slightest. It's 150 million percent Mia Farrow's side of the story, and that's it. I'm not going to sit here defending Woody Allen because I do think that he's a gross creep, and I'm going to get into that in a minute, but you can't take this documentary seriously as far as, like, evidence to prove that he's guilty of molesting Dylan because it's way too one-sided. If you just watch it passively, it is actually really, really convincing that Woody is guilty. Like, you're going to want to bring out the pitchfork. You're going to want to, like, run him off the road if you see him driving in New York. You're going to want to, like, put him in jail with Harvey Weinstein. Definitely not a good look for Woody, but if you watch it with a critical eye and then you look into some of the information and you find out the things and the evidence that was left out of the documentary and how certain things don't hold up, it gives you a whole different view of the project. project. There's just so much that they didn't put in that would have changed the narrative completely, but obviously, you know, their agenda was to paint Woody in a certain way. I think that the filmmakers... Look, the filmmakers do a lot of these sexual assault documentaries. They did one before that, again, didn't hold up. It had a lot of, like, factual errors and inconsistencies, and it got some criticism. So I think this is their thing. I think they feel like Woody Allen got away with being, you know, a pedophile or a sexual assaulter or whatever we're going to call him. They feel like he got away with it for so long, so this is his reckoning. They've got together. They've got Mia Farrow. They're, like, taking Woody down, but it doesn't hold up. And even some of the talking heads in this are questionable, like, not even just the evidence stuff, but, like, they had this New York Times reporter who comes on and he's like, you know, I can never watch a Woody Allen film again, as if that has anything to do with anything. Like, it's just there to influence you emotionally. And then they had Sunny Hostin from The View, like, she's weighing in as one of the doco's, like, legal pundits. That kind of made me roll my eyes. Like I said, the filmmakers have been busted before for not being completely objective. And I just wish they'd shown both sides, and not even just for, like, the journalistic aspect of it, where obviously you should be showing all of the facts and giving each side equal airtime and presenting all the evidence, but just from, like, an entertainment perspective, it would have made a better series if you had some ambiguity there and a bit of a whodunit element to it all, so then the viewer can look at it themselves and come to their own conclusion, which is what we do with most true crime documentaries. It's biased to its own detriment, honestly, because if it had just been presented in a more balanced way, it would have actually been more effective in condemning Woody. But because they made it such a one-sided social justice project, it actually, in my opinion, gives ammo to Woody's defenders, because now they can just say that he was the victim of a hit piece, and in one sweeping motion, they can just, like, disregard everything about him that is, like, you know, problematic, to say the least. They can throw it all out with this documentary, when the truth is there actually are some, like, eyebrow-raising things about Woody Allen that, like, for me, watching the documentary, I did not come away with a favorable impression of Woody Allen, and that's even with me seeing how biased and bullshit everything was. The documentary highlighted a lot of things about Woody that I already knew and everybody knew, but they'd kind of become so normalized over time that we all sort of, like, swept it aside a bit and just felt like, oh, well, and we kind of, like, made explanations for certain behavior in our head, I think, over time. And seeing it laid out in the documentary all in one go, like, as biased as it is, sorry to keep saying that, it brought it up for me again where I, like, reevaluated a lot of it. Like, firstly, there's definitely a pattern of Woody Allen going after barely legal girls. Like, and it was no secret at all, because all of his movies featured relationships between either himself or another old man with an extremely young woman. From what we know officially, the youngest girl he dated was 17. They met when she was 16. They started a sexual relationship when she was 17. He was in his 50s at the time, I believe. They also uncovered a bunch of his old notes and, like, early drafts of his scripts, and there was definitely a pattern there where he would start writing the female lead and she'd maybe be, like, 22 years old and a college student, and then she would go down and she would end up being, like, an 18-year-old, like, high schooler or something with, you know, long legs, and he would describe her in a very sexual fashion. He also framed all of the young female characters in his work as being the aggressors in all of the relationships with him. So because he, like, wrote and directed everything and starred in everything himself, he would portray himself as this, like, fumbling, nervous nerd trying to escape these, like, horny young babes that were just, like, so attracted to him and in awe of his intellect and just wanted to bang him all day. And look, this isn't illegal, I will stress, and I'm not conflating this with the molestation of a child. So I know that there is a difference between what they accuse him of doing to Dylan to him dating, like, 18-year-old actresses. Totally get it. And I'm sure that Woody did have young women aggressively pursue him in Hollywood, and they probably did fall in love with his intellect and his creative genius. That's just how things are, and, you know, Woody's a big deal. He would have had women throwing themselves at him, but I definitely had the sense still that he has a specific fixation on young, barely legal women. And I honestly, I think he would go for even younger teen girls if it was legal. I think that if he could have got away with, you know, being with like a 15-year-old or 14-year-old who is, you know, mature for her age in quotes, 14-year-old, like I feel like he would have gone there, honestly. I know that's like a harsh thing to like throw out there, but that's how I feel. And it is also a bit disturbing the way that he always justified these flings in his mind as framing them as the women are always the aggressors, which isn't the reality. Yes, I'm sure some of them are at times, but for every girl that's, you know, wise beyond her years and she's an aspiring starlet in Hollywood and she's thrown herself at Woody Allen, there would have been like a naive young girl that was groomed or manipulated by him, for sure, 100%. He is one of the most powerful and respected filmmakers in American history, and there's an enormous power imbalance between someone like Woody Allen at 55 and then like an 18-year-old who's trying to break into acting. But look, it's easy to kind of put that aside, right, and go, look, oh, it's Hollywood, it was a different time, it wasn't illegal, it's just how things go there. No, it's not what we would deem, you know, appropriate, but, you know, he shouldn't be in jail. Like, okay, fair enough if you want to say that. But I'll tell you what really turned me off Woody, and this was really, for me, what changed things overall. It was the way he pursued Sun Yi, Mia's adopted daughter. So we all know this story, right? Like, he fell in love with Sun Yi. According to him, when she was about like 19 or 20, his side says, they had an affair, then they ended up getting married and they've been together ever since. And because they've had this long-lasting marriage, it's almost normalized the relationship. Well, I mean, it has normalized the relationship. That's a fact, because most people don't really like bat an eye when they hear about it, or at least they didn't up until the Dylan stuff has resurfaced. But seeing it in the documentary and how he went about starting this relationship with Sun Yi and reevaluating it all myself, I find it so disgusting and so just morally kind of reprehensible. So Sun Yi was adopted from Korea by Mia Farrow. She came from a very traumatic and abusive background over there, and she was apparently very withdrawn and she carried a lot of trauma throughout her childhood, which is to be expected. She came from, you know, really, really dark place. And Woody wasn't her adoptive father, like officially, but he was around when she was growing up. He saw her as a young girl. He was kind of a father figure in many ways to a lot of Mia's children. So the timeline of when they got together is blurry. Like I said, his side says that it's around like 19 or 20 when she's in college. The documentary implies that it could have started when she was still in high school, which I honestly believe. I believe that it was like more around the 18 side, or possibly younger, I don't know. And when they first got together, this wasn't a romantic love affair. It's easy to apply to them now being married that it's like, oh, they're in love and everything. But when they started, it was about sex. Woody said in his book that it wasn't meant to be serious, that it was sort of like a passing May-December fling. And he told Mia the same. It wasn't until the molestation trial around, you know, Dylan that Woody and Sun Yi like came out publicly and said that they were in love and that Mia was jealous. And maybe they were in love at that stage. I don't know. But they certainly were not in love when Woody started screwing her. And for me, that changed my entire perspective, because Woody could have had any girl he wanted. He could pay for prostitutes, he could date the young, hot, you know, aspiring actresses in Hollywood, but he chose to go after his longtime girlfriend's adopted daughter. And that's something that would destroy a family. Not only is he cheating on Mia Farrow, he's damaging Mia's relationship with Sun Yi. And he's throwing a grenade into the entire family, because Mia had like 10 kids or something at that stage. Many of them were Sun Yi's adopted siblings. So for Woody to do this, like, you're not just hurting yourself, you're hurting Mia, you are hurting Sun Yi, and you're hurting all of these fucking kids in the family. All these kids that looked at him as a father figure, what are they going to think when they find out that he was banging Sun Yi, barely legal Sun Yi, who, again, we don't know the exact age. I honestly think more around, like, I mean, definitely a teenager, which is fucked. He was, what, 55, 6, 7, something around there. It's just so callous and selfish. I do think it's morally bankrupt. And regardless of how in love Sun Yi and Woody are now, he did groom her. He did prey on her. He was a 50-something-year-old man who was around her when she was a child. And he started having sex with her about the second she was legal. How is that? How is there not grooming or a predatory nature to that relationship? It's impossible. They also played audio. I can't remember if it was from his autobiography or taped phone calls, but he was speaking about his affair with Sun Yi like she was just a character in one of his films and not a human being. And I feel like that's probably how he sees most people. Like, he was so rich and powerful and such a creative genius that the people in his life, for him, probably just came in to be tools for his own pleasure, if it's like sexual pleasure, or a muse for his work and his creativity. I feel like there was a certain sensitivity chip or humanity missing from Woody Allen, and from watching the documentary, I really see it now. I can't get past the affair with Sun Yi once I put it in the full context of her age and the other children involved, and Mia and his pattern for going after young girls. I just think it's so fucking gross. I can't say for sure if he molested Dylan, because the courts have thrown that out multiple times, and the docu-series is not credible. It just doesn't hold up to scrutiny. The filmmakers themselves are biased. There's so much stuff about Mia Farrow that is not positive, and it doesn't even get a look in the documentary. It's comically one-sided, I will say. And yeah, but Woody Allen, not a great person at all. The documentary did work to some extent in the fact that I really don't like Woody Allen as a person anymore, whereas before I was very neutral, and all I really cared about with Woody Allen was just watching the movies and whether I liked the films or not. But now I don't look at him as a person in a positive light whatsoever. I still recommend watching the documentary, by the way, because like it's still compelling. Like it's an enjoyable watch. Like you'll get sucked into the narrative. Just keep in mind that it's like manipulated and it's not fact. Think of it as a drama or one side of the story, and just enjoy it for what it is. Let's get into some of the latest Housewives and Bravo news and recaps. You know, the Housewives is going the way of The Bachelor, where I feel like a lot of the stuff that's happening off the show is actually like more interesting than the show itself. As far as The Real Housewives of New Jersey goes, that is so boring now. It started off with a bang. We obviously had these cheating rumors that Teresa brought up about Jackie. Now that the novelty of that has worn off, there's nothing to watch. It's like, it's gone back to background watching for me. But Danielle Staub, she has been doing these completely unhinged Instagram live recaps of each episode, and her recaps are better than the actual show. Like, she gets into fights with fans, she goes off on deranged tangents. It's incredible. I love it. I want to get Danielle Staub on the podcast. I heard that she did somebody else's podcast and there were some issues with it, and the episode didn't end up getting released, so I don't know if I want to deal with the headache of it all, but I would love to interview Danielle. She is an icon. Speaking of deranged, crazy Jen Shah from Salt Lake City is back at it again. We love talking about Jen Shah here on the podcast, don't we? There are new receipts on this nutcase every day. There's like footage of her abusing her former designer Koa. And now, to be fair, some of the allegations that have come out against him do not paint him in the best light. I don't know, apparently he's a scammer or something. I have no idea, but there's still nothing to justify her aggressive behavior towards him or any employees. A new clip has come out of Jen Shah mocking Lisa Barlow's tequila line. Remember, Lisa was her only ally on the show by the end of the season, so that's not a good look for Jen, although I don't know how deep it is. It could have just been something she filmed at the start of the season before they were friends or something. I don't know. I don't really care about that, but the latest leak that is pretty juicy is Jen using the transgender slur that begins with a T. It is some leaked audio that has made its way onto Instagram. I wish I could say the word, because I am using it in the context of quoting somebody, but people are so sensitive now that even me doing that and not using it as a slur, actually just using it in the context of a discussion that we're having to relay information to you, that will probably upset people. So I won't even bother saying it, because I just going to keep the snowflakes at bay this week. One of my listeners actually lost their shit the other week and blocked me because I said the F word. The F word for gay men, not the F-U-C-K word. Even though I'm gay myself. It was funny as well, because I didn't actually say the word itself. You know, like I didn't say the three-letter word. I literally said, and I quote, the F word. end quote. But apparently that was enough to upset somebody that I even referenced that there's a word that begins with F and has three letters. Gay men still use that word all the time. FYI, it's almost kind of like how people of color will use certain slurs with each other, like within their group. Obviously, people outside of that group can't use it. And that's just sort of the same with the F word with gay men. It's still like a very common part of the vernacular. You actually still see it on Twitter constantly, by the way, like every day, like every gay Twitter account uses that word. It's funny because the LGBT community as a whole used to be very transgressive and I'd say very politically incorrect. And now it's changed so much where they've kind of become like the tattletales and the speech police in a lot of ways. Not that I'm saying that gay people should go around using slurs. It's just very different from, I think, gay people before, where they didn't really fit into any social norms, whether it's, you know, how they lead their sex life and the kind of language and conversations that they have. And even politically, I would say that LGBT people were probably like more radical politically. And now it's kind of like, I don't know, they're all just like centrist speech policing normies, I feel like. But anyway, I'm going off on a tangent, and I'm not saying any of this to defend Jen Shah. She was using the T word in a derogatory sense to insult somebody, and I just think it's hilarious that she's been caught doing it because she was acting like Miss Progressive Woke on the show and on social media, and she's like one of the most problematic people on Bravo now, which is hilarious. Like, not only does she, you know, verbally abuse her staff and, you know, throw things at people and that whole bit, but she's using an LGBT slur on top of it. And what else does she do? She tries to co-opt the black struggle and make it about herself when she isn't even black. That's like one of the worst things, I feel like. One of the Housewives fan accounts I follow on Twitter said something about how she's transphobic and racist, and I responded sarcastically, but Housewives Twitter said she's woke because she wore a Biden dress, which is true. Do you remember that? She posed in this fucking stupid dress on Instagram. It was like vote Biden or something, and everyone was like, oh my god, we love you, Jen Shah, like finally some, you know, woke housewives and, you know, no more of these crazy OC Republicans. And now it's like Jen Shah is like the worst person on Bravo. They do it all the time. And it's like these same stands that will like call people racist for not liking Garcelle or Meghan Markle or something. And then they'll stand Bronwyn and Jen Shah, who are just so off the charts, like problematic. Oh, they look like such morons. And they love Mary Cosby too, who runs a cult, allegedly. I can't with these people. So let's see what happens with Jen Shah. I feel like with the way that the world is, people would probably let Jen Shah get away with like physically assaulting people and abusing staff and just being a tyrant. But now that she's said kind of an offensive remark, that might be the nail in the coffin. She could probably murder somebody and no one would care, but now that she said the T word, Jen Shah, you're in big trouble with Bravo now, so let's just keep an eye on what happens with that situation. There's another racism scandal over on The Real Housewives of Dallas. I know that I said that I stopped watching this one because it was so boring, which it is, but I caught up because I wanted to see what all the fuss was about with this new controversy. Side note, can you imagine some random person who doesn't even watch reality TV listening to my podcast or basically any Bachelor or Real Housewives podcast right now? That would be like, so you're telling me that all these shows are racist, yet you still watch them and you make podcasts about them? They would be so confused. Like, the whole reality TV podcasting space now is just breaking down microaggressions and offensive tweets, I feel like. Any normal person looking in from the outside would just be like, why the fuck are you still watching these shows? Well, maybe not to me, because I kind of debunk a lot of this stuff, but definitely the social justice Bravo podcasts, they would be very puzzled and be like, maybe you should just stop watching these shows if they're this bad. Anyway, let me give you the backstory on this Dallas racism drama, because it's actually pretty interesting and there's sort of a lot to it. So I'm going to go right back to the start, okay? So at the beginning of last season, this old Instagram video of Brandi Redmond, she's the ginger cheerleader with the bratty kids. She's pretty funny. She's like one of the main characters on the show. this video leaked of her, and she was doing like a really stereotypical Asian impression and talking about having squinty eyes. It was pretty racist. I could definitely see why it was really offensive at the time. Like, I thought it was worse than what Leanne did, in my personal opinion, but I mean, they were both bad. But anyway, yeah. So Brandy gets a lot of backlash for this video at the time, which I actually thought was pretty deserved, not just because the video was bad, but because she really came after Leanne on the show for like some of the things that Leanne did about Carrie, who is Mexican, and people said that was racist. And Brandy like led the charge to kind of, you know, cancel Leanne. So when I watched the backlash play out with Brandy, I was kind of like, well, why should any of us give, you know, Brandy any grace and understanding for her racism controversy when she was so vicious towards Leanne about Leanne's scandal? I felt like, honey, you're just, you know, you can dish it, you better be able to take it. So I kind of felt like Brandy was getting, you know, a bit of what she deserved. And she endured a ton of online backlash for this, to the point that she had to check into some kind of like mental health facility. And she actually said that she was feeling suicidal from everything. Now, at first, I thought it was a bit of a PR stunt. This is like, you know, typical celebrity thing. You get backlash for something and then you go, oh, my mental health, or I'm a sex addict, or, you know, I was drinking too much, or whatever. You have these excuses. But the more that I have like watched the show and watched Brandy, I actually 100% believe now that it was sincere and that the backlash had a serious impact on her mental health. I think it's all legit now. I told you guys just last episode how someone like twisted one of my Meghan Markle tweets, which I read out to you all on the show, so you could hear it for yourself. And someone like twisted one of my Meghan Markle tweets and tried to paint me as like racist with it. And you know how troll accounts would make up saying that I didn't like Garcelle and Beverly Hills because of her race. And that stuff really upset me. And that was just a small group of like people on Twitter, like just like a handful of like trolls. So I can imagine how much it would impact Brandy having literally thousands of accounts do that to you on social media, on top of like headlines in the media and the news calling you racist and all of that. And again, I'm definitely not excusing her like racially insensitive video or anything. She deserves some flack, but it can't be ideal for your mental health to have to endure those level of attacks and criticism, especially in the public eye. Like, there's so much shame and embarrassment that comes with having those labels put on you, whether it's deserved or not. And the people that do attack you for being racist, by the way, they will say way worse things than you said originally. Like, some of the tweets that I get are so bad. It's just like, yeah, I won't even repeat the stuff that people have said to me. So I can only imagine the level that Brandy's getting. There would be like death threats and just the whole bit. So fast forward to the new season of Dallas, right? Brandy returns. They thought that maybe they were going to axe her because they fired Leanne for her controversy, but they bring back Brandy and they also bring on this new Asian housewife, Dr. Tiffany Moon. I've talked about her before. She's pretty annoying, but she's actually like, she's a really nice person. She's very well-intentioned. She's smart. I just think she is a great person, as much as her voice irritates me, but she's really nice and the fans love her. People love her. She's a good addition. So first episode on the show, Tiffany has to confront Brandy about the racist video because they all, I can't remember what they meet up for. They made up for lunch or something. And yeah, housewives works. It's like, can I talk to you for a minute? And then you confront them over an issue. I'm sure that this was producer driven. Okay. So Tiffany shares her experience as a Chinese immigrant in America and the racist bullying that she got in school. And she starts crying and Brandy starts crying. They hug. It was quite a touching moment. I thought it was handled very well because Tiffany had the platform that she needed to be able to share her experience. Brandy was able to hear it and apologize. Then they put it to bed and they move forward with a clean slate. Like, that to me was a very positive depiction of taking accountability and then having forgiveness and moving forward instead of just like dwelling on the negativity and, you know, rehashing it over and over like they're doing over on The Bachelor. So the next few episodes of the show air after that, and there's a few incidents where the white women on the cast are put into situations that I think were set up by producers to make them look racist might be too harsh to say, but to make them look, I don't know, culturally unaware, ignorant, you know, you get the drift. One scene was Tiffany taking the women to a Chinese restaurant to eat chicken feet, which obviously they didn't want to eat. They're from Texas. They don't have a developed, you know, palate when it comes to food. And the next incident is this like pizza party that they do at Tiffany's house. And she slipped like crickets and bugs into their pizzas or something. So I think she said that they eat that in China. It was something, I don't know, it was something like that. But the women, they didn't want bugs in their pizza. They put bugs in the pizza. Well, Tiffany did. And, you know, they didn't like it. Brandy on the show was actually physically sick after she realized that the bugs were in her food. Again, producer set up, in my opinion. Everyone on Twitter at that time started calling like the women, like Brandy and Cameron in particular, they were calling them racist because they didn't want to eat the chicken feet and the crickets. And, you know, I pushed back at that at the time. I'm like, that's fucking ridiculous. Most people don't want to eat fucking chicken feet. People don't want to eat chicken feet, like move on. So, you know, I covered it at the time and I did say at that time that it was totally staged by producers. I never blamed Tiffany for setting them up because I believe that she was a tool of production. I believe that the producers manipulated her into doing these things with the goal of making the women uncomfortable and creating tension. Like with the Chinese dinner, for example, I'm sure the producer was in, you know, Tiffany's ear, and Tiffany, I think, is very well intentioned. And they were like, we just want you to be able to showcase some of your culture on the show. We're trying to add some more diversity. And, you know, to broaden it for the show. So why don't you take the women to a Chinese restaurant and just, you know, order some like food and we'll be able to like showcase that. Like they would have put it into her head like that. Then she goes there and she does it. And then the way that it comes off on the show is like, oh, these ignorant, you know, rednecks from Texas don't want to eat chicken feet. Fast forward to a few more episodes. Tiffany is having trouble fitting into the group because she's a bit of a straighty 180. She's a doctor. She's very educated. She's a bit uptight. She's not your typical alcoholic housewife that doesn't have a job and just gets drunk and parties all day. She was raised by, you know, conservative, you know, Asian parents who were all about like studying and grades and work ethic and everything. So she doesn't have a big social life. She's not a party animal at all. She's just like a hard working mom. And of course, she's not going to like fit in completely with this group of women who are just like party animals. Naturally, she's going to have problems and, you know, struggle to like fit in with this group. So while this is all going on and Tiffany's having her own issues fitting in, Brandy is getting really paranoid and uncomfortable around her. So in one episode, Brandy delusionally thinks that Tiffany is trying to like have a dig at her about something to do with medication. She kind of confronts Tiffany and she's like, oh, I thought you were trying to make me look bad by making it like I didn't know what I was talking about, something like that. I can't be bothered explaining the specific issue, but Tiffany wasn't doing that. Tiffany's a nice person. She's not that calculated housewife that sits there scheming of ways to make their co-star look bad on camera. I know a lot of housewives do that, which is probably why Brandy was paranoid about it, because this is how these women behave on these shows. Tiffany absolutely was not doing that. After that, there is also a scene at a dinner that they're all at on the cast trip, and Brandy addresses Tiffany, and she basically says that she feels uncomfortable around Tiffany and that she kind of feels scared to be herself and to let loose. And Tiffany's like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't have a problem with you. You know, I forgave you. We moved forward. We had a clean slate. Like, what's going on? Tiffany looks kind of overwhelmed by it. And in one of her confessionals, you see her, she's frustrated. And she says, she's like, I can't help being Asian. Like, if that makes you uncomfortable, that's your problem. Which is like, yeah, of course, she's spot on with that. Like, none of that's on Tiffany. That's everyone else's issue if they're feeling uncomfortable around her. It's not on Tiffany. So as usual, though, the Bravo fans, they read the absolute worst into it and into Brandy. And so when Brandy said that she felt like she couldn't be herself, people on Twitter are just immediately like, oh, so you can't be racist anymore. Boo-hoo. Like, really? Yeah, I'm sure that Brandy was just like dying to shove chopsticks in her ears and scream the N-word at the table. Like, that's not what Brandy was trying to get across from that scene. But I feel really bad for Tiffany foremost. I feel bad for Brandy secondly. And I blame Bravo and production for this whole thing. First of all, like, Tiffany should not have to deal with Brandy's white guilt. It's not Tiffany's fault, it's not Tiffany's problem, and it's a really unfair burden being placed on her. Like, Bravo literally brought her onto this show as part of their push for diversity, and just like they do with, like, all of their non-white cast members, they make them come in and they turn them into social justice warriors where they need to, like, you know, confront the rest of the cast for their, like, you know, microaggressions and stuff. And that's what they did with Tiffany. They, you know, opened the show with her confronting Brandy over the racist video. And if it was just that one scene, I could understand, and, you know, that's fine. But like I said, they've set Tiffany up by encouraging all of these scenarios where it's like she's trying to make the women eat the chicken feet and, you know, putting the crickets in the pizza and stuff, and Tiffany probably is there unaware that the producers are even doing that to her. It's just so fucked up. And I have all this sympathy for Brandy, because if you were just attacked by everyone on social media for months as a racist, to the point you were feeling suicidal, which I genuinely believe that she was, then you come back to film The Real Housewives, wouldn't you be paranoid in, like, this climate especially? Like, especially when episode one, you meet the new Asian housewife and you have to talk about how you were racist in your video. Then episode two, you're being set up by producers to eat chicken feet. Then episode three, you've got bugs and crickets slipped into your food and people want to see how you're going to react to that. And people talk about mental health so much now and how serious it is. Well, Brandy was suicidal and she had mental health issues from her backlash. Like, is that not valid at all? You've taken somebody who was feeling suicidal and you put them on a housewife show, which is the most completely toxic environment imaginable, and it's during the most racially sensitive time in American history, and she's having to do these you know, racism kind of like storylines. And of course, you know, it's on her to address the whole thing with Tiffany, of course, but they've kept doing it. Like, it's not just like, let's address it at the start. They've pushing the buttons with the other scenarios that they've set up. And like, with the way the producers manipulate situations, of course you're going to be paranoid. Like, you'd be paranoid during the filming of a regular season of The Real Housewives. So when you add all these other factors into it as well, like, it's no surprise that Brandy's behaving in the way that she is. And Brandy has since quit the show before these recent episodes aired, which doesn't surprise me. And the social media reaction has been so cruel and unforgiving towards her, and I think completely lacks nuance for some of the stuff at play behind the scenes. And I just feel bad for her, but I really feel really bad for Tiffany, because Tiffany didn't deserve for this to be her first season. And it's not fair for Brandy to put her own baggage and guilt onto Tiffany. Like, even though Brandy's doing it, I think a lot of the reason she's doing it is more because of, like, how production have staged things. Like, at the end of the day, it's like Brandy's putting her own shit onto Tiffany, and Tiffany didn't need to cop that, especially when she's coming into this group for the first time. And Tiffany really doesn't fit in with this group of women, honestly, and it's tough to see her struggling because she's trying so hard to fit in and to let loose, and she tries to do the whole drunken wild housewives thing to the best of her abilities, but it's just not who she is at her core, and she knows it, and she seems to be suffering emotionally and quite overwhelmed by just the entire process of the show. I see Tiffany and Brandy both are victims of Bravo and production this season. Brandy has made the right move by quitting. She actually should have never come back on the show, honestly, largely because of her mental health. And I don't know if Tiffany should stay on as well. Like, Tiffany doesn't fit in, but she's also, like, one of the best parts of the season, so it is hard. Like, they could fire some of the Dallas girls and bring in more of, like, Tiffany's friends and build it a bit more around Tiffany, but then I think the show would be, like, too highbrow and the viewers would just get bored because they whinge when there's not drama. Like, I'm actually surprised that they are liking Tiffany as much as they are, because usually the housewife that, like, doesn't want to be wild and crazy, people say is boring. So, yeah, I think that if Tiffany came on more with her own friends and was just being her classy self, like, viewers would complain about it. So I don't know. I think that Dallas is pretty done. I stopped watching it. I only tuned back in so I could kind of cover this topic. Out of, like, five seasons of this show, one or two have been good. Like, season two was incredible. The rest are just like, eh, take it or leave it. And it's getting progressively worse now with each passing season. I would not be mad if they just axed Dallas for good. And then some of the more talented cast members, like Leanne, like Tiffany, can move on to other projects. I could totally see Tiffany on, like, some medical talk show or just being a talking head in general on like medical issues and stuff. I don't know, like she does have star quality. She's very likable. She's very smart. So I wish them the best, and I will not be watching the rest of Dallas, but I think I'll just wait for the reunion. I'll watch that. On a bit of a lighter note, this season of Summer House is fantastic. I think it peaked again with the last episode, which was the best episode of the season. It was so fucking funny. So my girl Lindsay, she's my favorite. The episode before that, she had this huge fight with her boyfriend because she was putting pressure on him, like, you need to step up to the plate, you need to do more for me. So he set up this little dinner for her by the pool for her birthday. Apparently, it wasn't good enough for her. She picked a fight with him. It ended in disaster. He called an Uber and left. And leaving is quite a big deal in this situation because they're in a COVID bubble to film Summer House. So if you leave, like, you're out of the bubble. Like, it's hard to come back in. I think if you come back in, you've got a quarantine and everything. So he was definitely serious about getting the fuck out of there. And look, she's hard work. She's like the ultimate alpha female, but she also has abandonment issues and huge insecurities. So she like purposely drives people away, but then she gets upset and enraged when they leave her. It's like her whole thing is like she just wants to like push and abuse you, but then you can't leave her. Like you have to take it to like prove how much you want to be with her. And anyway, her and this guy, they're kind of like working things out because she said to him that he had to like do something to prove that he's serious about the relationship because I guess they've been like texting and everything since he ran off. And he made an 8-slide PowerPoint presentation about their relationship with like pie charts and graphs and stuff. It was so fucking funny. They actually played some of the pie chart on the show. And some of the other cast members were like, that's so unsexy. If anyone sent me a pie chart, you know, I would dump them. That's like a turn off. I thought it was like pretty hot because it shows someone, if someone has the time that they're going to sit down and make an 8-slide PowerPoint presentation about you with like lists and stuff, as long as it's not like too critical of me, I would appreciate it a lot. I'll be like, oh, wow, you really do care. Like you put in all this effort. And Hannah and Paige, the Giggly Squad, they're such a vibe. Look, I love them. I want to join the Giggly Squad, okay? I know that everyone hates them. I don't give a shit. I am a fan. I related to them so much last episode because everyone was partying downstairs and getting drunk, and Hannah and Paige were in bed together watching Love Island on their laptop, and then they texted the other people. They're like, can you please turn the music down? Do you turn the music down so we can watch Love Island? And then there was another funny scene, like, they're sitting in there watching Love Island and then they hear Lindsay fall down the stairs. I think Lindsay was drunk. And they're like whispering about it. And Paige whispers to Hannah, she goes, Lindsay's so drunk she fell down the stairs, but we're immature. Because they're like the youngest ones in the house. Look, I love them. And they dropped a mid-season trailer. So the rest of the season looks pretty fucking juicy. Hannah's new boyfriend enters the house. I don't know how they got him in, but he looks very old and they acknowledge it. I think it was Kyle's like, he looks old as fuck. The timeline for me, by the way, I know that we've been trying to figure out this whole Luke, Hannah thing. Was it fake for the show? What's the timeline? I think it adds up, whatever. I'm done with it. I believe Hannah now. They just look like there was lots of drama. And I think there's some kind of punch up or bust up involving Luke. So good riddance to you, Luke. I hope he just flames out because I think he's such a loser. And yeah, I love this show. It's so fun. The last Below Deck episode was great. It's kind of hard for me to recap Below Deck Sailing Yacht because the new episode of it airs like the day after my podcast drops. So it just feels like stale by the time I'm trying to record it. But look, people were banging on Below Deck Sailing Yacht. It's a wild party boat, wild time. It's great. That's it for this week, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Remember, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at UnpopularJP. I'll be back in a few days with another episode. I have Kate Casey on. We talked about Clubhouse and is Housewives over now? Has it jumped the shark? We talked about a bunch of other stuff. It was fun. And yeah, I'll see you in a few days. Thanks, guys.